Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. New Year's resolutions to exercise more and eat better often flounder. That's kind of a pun, I guess. It's food and verb. Within a few weeks or months, can technology come to our rescue with clever reminders and games? Today on All Sides, we'll hear how gadgets, apps, and social media can keep our self-improvement goals for health and fitness on track. Joining us now to talk about all of that are our regular digital media consultants, Deborah Jasper and Betsy Hubbard, co-founders of Mindset Digital. Welcome back, Deborah and Betsy.
Thanks. Great. It's great to be here, Ann.
Yep. Good to see you, Ann.
For our listeners, did you make a New Year's resolution this year to exercise or eat better? Are you using technology to help keep yourself you on track? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Go to our Facebook page or tweet me at AnnFisherWOSU. So, a gadget called Strive. I never know how to pronounce anything anymore because the spellings are also weird. It's spelled STRIIV. Bills itself as a personal trainer in your pocket. It's a key-sized device. It monitors how much you walk and donates. What isn't cool is what it does when you do walk, right?
I know. That's really cool. It's sort of based on the same premise as Race for the Cure or, you know, the other ways that we're trying to get people to exercise and raise money. But in this case, you have some options. So the more you walk, you can choose that they will donate on your behalf for three different charities. So clean water to families in South America, polio vaccines, or you can help save the rainforest. Lots of great options. But what I like is the gaming aspect of this. I mean, it's hard to get me to park my car a long way from the entrance. You know, I need things to give me an incentive. I'm one of those people who always try to park as close as I can to the entrance. But it's things like that. So people, if you look at the ads for this app, they'll say, and now I am parking my car further away because I'm trying to walk more steps so I can raise money for charity. And also just sort of the gaming aspects of this. You're starting to track
how much money you can raise for charity.
And how much can you walk? You know, how many ways can you get more exercise during the day?
Yeah, some of these devices and what we're talking about now are, you know, additional devices that often link up to a smartphone or you can download or upload data to the web. And they're much more sophisticated than your old pedometer that would just count steps. You know, they will track activity, but it tracks it all for you so you can start to see the patterns. And instead of having to remember how many steps did I walk yesterday, you can see a whole graph that will show you how active you were at different hours of the day. So it gives you a lot more data and feedback on what you're doing. And a lot of people find that, you know, that's a great incentive to keep moving.
Right. They even are tracking some of these apps, body media. So Betsy and I are thinking we might get body media and then we can come back on the show and we can say, hey,
can we track your...
I didn't lose anything.
We're not promising to publish our data, but we are saying we would report out on how we do.
What's body media?
So it is a device and you wear an armband, although right now they're getting ready to unveil in Vegas a new way to do body media. So it's a patch that you wear on your body. It says it collects 5,000 data points a minute about your activities. So it really can say, wow, you're waking up a lot at 2 o'clock in the morning, or you're really restless.
I don't need to be reminded of that.
Yeah, like I didn't know I was waking up at 2 in the morning. But it's really giving you a sense. It'll chart for you. How are you sleeping? When are you getting the most exercise? Wow, I'm really sedentary during this period.
So it can tell even when you're sleeping versus when you're just still?
Yeah, you're sleeping.
You wear it 24 hours a day, and it'll measure how much sleep you're getting and the quality of your sleep cycle as well. So it's looking at activity and rest.
Right. Are you going to get it with us, Ann? We're not saying it's great. We haven't tried it, so this
right,
is not
okay.
an endorsement. But we thought it'd be fun to do and just to see how it goes.
It's called Body
Media.
Yeah.
And then Betsy just bought an app, and it's cheap. It's like $12.
This is another
for her kids.
So there's a company out there that's trying to combat childhood obesity through bringing all of this to the younger age group. And so it's called ZAMZEE. And what they use is, again, it's a little pocket device. You know, you can just slip it in your pocket, and then it looks like a USB or a flash drive because you can just upload all the data to your computer, but it's geared to younger kids and teens, and it tracks their activity, and they can earn badges and virtual currency, you know, so it's rewarding them for how active they're being, which is a, you know, a goal for a lot of parents in America to get their kids more active. What it will also do is, of course, with things like this, it gives that kind of feedback to kids. And what they're finding from the research is that kids are moving about 30% more, kids who are using a device like Zamzi. So I'm going to try it with my two kids.
Just call me cynical. How do you keep a kid from just like juggling it in their hand, you know, all day long? I mean, because it's a very subtle measurement it's taking. It's movement.
Right. It's movement. You know, that's excellent. I'll tell you what. I will challenge my son to see if he can game this system, and I bet he can. So I'll let you know what we find out, Ann.
You can tell you are a journalist. I'm just saying. Just hit a few of these. I mean, there are more than 11,000 fitness apps right now that you can choose from, fitness and food, nutrition apps that you can choose from. I mean, it's amazing when you think about the fact that we only got apps in 07.
Yeah.
You know, and now look, I mean, there are lots of different options, but there's some cool ones around food too. So my favorite is how do you pronounce it, do you think? Fooducate?
Yeah.
Which allows you to use your iPhone or your phone to scan food, you know, to scan barcodes, and it will tell you, this is a pretty good food. I'll give it a C rating. I'll give it a B rating. Here's some healthier foods like it you might want to consider. So, you know, when you're in the grocery and you're saying, I don't know, is this a lot of sugar? I don't know. I can't tell by reading the packet. You can scan the barcode and it will sort of assess the food you're thinking about buying. That's cool. I mean, I think I would use that. So lots of different ways to think about tracking what we're eating, what we're doing, how much we're walking, how we're sleeping.
Now, when we were talking about Strive, and then there was another one, Fitbit, those both cost about $100. Body Media, it says, is a little more expensive.
It's actually a lot more expensive.
Oh, okay.
It's about $229.
Well, then the answer to Body Media question is no.
It does a lot more, though.
It does.
I mean, it's saying that it's tracking much more. You know, the other one is sort of like a really high-end pedometer. This is much more. They're saying they're much more sophisticated, that it's really tracking, you know, thousands of data points, that it can tell you a lot more about your sleep patterns, for example. So
and
I don't
the
know.
Entry-level model for Body Media is about $150, too. And again, this connects up. So, my iPhone becomes a monitoring device. If I want to see through the day how much I'm moving or my activity level, I can just look at my iPhone and log in and see what Body Media is telling me. And I can add a food log in there, too. So I can really track calories in, calories out, and rest and get a more complete picture of my health.
Although, as Betsy and I were saying, I mean, the real downside of all of these is in terms of calories, you're still having to type in your food. You're still having to estimate how much you're eating. And studies show we always underestimate how much we're eating. And we're not all that good at remembering that we had that bag of peanuts, you know, after lunch. And so it's only the food part of this is only as good as you are at tracking. You know, that's not something it's doing on your behalf. But they do think eventually they'll get there. I mean, there's some talk of future sort of apps being able to tell if you're wearing a patch when you adjusted your medicine. Think how crazy this could sort of get. And this can really help you if you're working with your doctor and they're trying to assess, you know, you're really on a medical weight loss plan or...
Well, ostensibly, could a physician prescribe something like this?
Sure.
If they can prescribe physical...
If
watching and making sure you take your medication at the right time or you eat at the right time or you eat the right things at the right time.
Right. Or you're exercising
right.
as much. You know, the only downside about this is, this data could go to your trainer and then he'd know you were lying when you said that you did that hour workout because he could tell. So, you know, I mean, it is going, but I do think it has the potential to dramatically change healthcare and the way that we're monitoring our health.
Right. And if you're just joining us, my guest, Betsy Hubbard, and also Deborah Jasper, they are the co-founders of Mindset Digital. We're talking about apps that can help you get in shape and stay in shape and eat right. So if you have a question or comment for them, get it in right away, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, I always kind of extrapolate out in my science fiction brain about, wow, someday they'll just like attach this, they'll embed it into your, under your skin. We'll be born this way, and they'll stick it in, they'll watch us. And if you're not eating right and getting enough exercise, you'll get busted.
Right. Well, some people worry about insurance companies.
Insurance companies
now are saying, hey, put this device in your car, and if you drive 55, you'll get, you know, lower rates, or so, you know, you drive the speed limit. So you could sort of extrapolate out and think, oh, I don't think I want my doctor monitoring my every move, or I certainly don't want my insurance company monitoring my every move. You know, we're not there yet, but I do think that that your ability to know everything about your own body, that has grown exponentially, even in the last couple of years. But it could be really good too, right? I'd love to sort of know more data about how I'm sleeping, how I'm doing, when I'm exercising, when I'm not, you know, so it can be used for good or evil, Anne.
So you said there's 11,000 fitness apps, fitness and food apps out there. How many people are using them?
So right now what we know is that about 50% of Americans with some kind of cell phone have downloaded apps, and about 11% have downloaded some kind of health and fitness app. Now, the highest age group right now is 30 to 49. They've downloaded, about 30% of that age group has downloaded some health and fitness apps. So clearly, you know, this is a growing category. They estimate that by 2015, it's going to be a $400 million business. And when you think that most of these apps are, you know, $2, $3, and a whole bunch of them are free, that's a lot of people choosing to use their mobile technology to improve their health.
There's one, it's called Motorola's Moto Active. It reorganizes your music, recognizing the songs that make you work the hardest, and I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, so a lot of these apps tie into your existing music collection, because, you know, that solves all those copyright and personal preference tastes and things like that. But most of the workout apps that you can download, you can choose to listen to your own music that you might have on your phone, or if you get like an iPod Nano, for example, that already has fitness apps built into it. So if you're going to go on that run, now you can log your run, you can see exactly how many miles, you can see how fast you're going, you can keep track of that data, and that's just built into your iPod, whether you ask for it or not.
Is that built into the iPhone too?
No, but there's apps you can download to do that. Okay. And so there's great apps, like there's Couch to 5K, which takes beginning runners, and it helps lead them through an interval system where, you know, the first day you walk for 25 minutes and you only run for 5, and then over the course of 8 weeks, they get you up to the point where you're running, you know, 3.1 miles, so...
Well,
there's an app for everything.
There's an app for that.
Well, you know, I'm fascinated by this, and I really would like you to keep us posted on your progress.
Let you know what happens with us. We'll let you know what happens with Betsy's kids.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see if they juggle the app
or the Zamzy.
You know, yesterday, Sam Grobart, he's a technology blogger for the New York Times. He reported that gadgets telling us to eat less and exercise more are a major theme at this year's Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And later on, coming up, we're going to hear from Steve Fox of PC World, but what he's looking forward to at the International Consumer Electronics Show, I should say, in Las Vegas. So in lieu of that, at the moment, I want to say thanks to Betsy Hubbard. Thank you, Betsy.
Glad to be here, Ann.
And also Deborah Jasper. Thanks for joining us, Deborah.
Thanks, Ann. Always fun.
Deborah Jasper and Betsy Hubbard are co-founders of Mindset Digital. They come back, one or the other or both, if we're lucky, every week on Tech Tuesday. So as I said, coming up, Steve Fox from PC World. Stay with us. This is All Sides from with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Fact checkers comb through politicians' statements in ads, debates, on the rope line, and on stump speeches.
Those businesses have now added over 100,000 jobs.
But are those whoppers and Pinocchios they give out accurate and disinterested, or debatable and slanted? I'm Neil Conan, checking the fact checkers. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
King and Talk of the Nation is this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 40 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Sunny skies today, warming up to a high of 48 degrees. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low of 36. Rain for Wednesday, mainly in the afternoon, and a high of 48 degrees. There's more rain expected Wednesday night, a low of 36. And still a chance of showers for Thursday, but still mild temperatures with a high of 40. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas is the world's largest consumer technology trade show. It opens today, featuring 2,700 exhibitors and an expected attendance of 140,000 people. Today on All Sides, we'll hear about the trends to watch as gadget makers get ready to show off their latest tech products for the coming year. Joining us now is Steve Fox, Editorial Director of PC World in San Francisco, where he oversees editorial content and strategy for PCWorld.com and PC World Magazine. Welcome back, Steve.
It's good to be here, although soon I won't be here. I'll be in Las Vegas.
Right. You're waiting at the airport in San Francisco?
Yeah, I'm on my way.
You're just about to take off to join the throng. Are you excited?
Excited.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for many, many years.
Exactly.
So I love seeing the new stuff. I'm not so crazy about the crazy cab lines, the impossibility of actually getting into this or that press conference that you want to because there's, you know, many of the 140,000 are already doing it. And basically, you know, fighting my way in for the next 4 days. But then again, for a tech journalist, this is really what it's all about. This is our Super Bowl.
This is the last year that Microsoft is going to participate in the way that they are. They usually do the keynote, the president does, or the CEO, and that kind of a thing. And
This is definitely a trend. These big shows, and CES is about as big as they get, are one way for companies to get attention. But if you look at the way Apple has, say, managed this, and Apple is not a participant, they want to do their own shows. They want to get people, you know, around rallying around their products and what they're doing at their own venues. So, you know, everyone essentially takes, goes backstage, and you know you're sort of second seat in all this. If you're here, it's hard to get a lot of attention. You know, Sony spends a lot of money. A lot of people spend a lot of money trying to get attention here, but it's difficult. So you know, I do think that this is still a great venue for people to present new and interesting stuff. But companies like Microsoft and, as we said, Apple, and I'm sure some others, find that this is not the best way to present what they're trying to do.
What about the timing of it? I mean, it comes in January, right after the big, huge gift-buying season. How useful is that?
Well, most of the things that you're going to see here, many, many of them, you're not going to be able to buy right now. In fact, you know, we're seeing some TVs, or we'll see TVs, for instance, that you maybe won't be able to buy until the second or third quarter. So this is just, you know, you start beating the drum right about now. This is not necessarily about sales this month. This is about starting to build the excitement. We've all, binged and purged. We've bought all the stuff that we want. Now there's going to be a little time between that next purchase cycle. This is a great time for people to see what's on display. Now, this is a show for buyers, and, you know, often it feels for us, it feels like it's for buyers and for journalists. We get to write all about this stuff. We get to play with some of it, often in, you know, pre-production, get our hands on things and get an idea of where tech is going.
My guest is Steve Fox, editorial director at PC World. He's getting ready to take off for Las Vegas to go to the International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. If you have a question or comment for Steve, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. PC World says that each year a few big product trends emerge. In 2011, it was the Android tablets. In 2010, it was 3D televisions and e-readers. And in 2009, netbooks were the hot topic. This year, Steve, you're looking at five trends that people are already talking about. Let's start with the OLED HD TVs. OLED stands for Organic Light Emitting Diode High Definition Televisions.
Right. Well, so not real catchy, right?
Yeah, I have no idea really what it means.
Well, basically, these are, you know, OLED TVs. They look fantastic. They're very vivid. They're faster response times. And we're definitely, you know, have seen this technology around for some time, but it hasn't been necessarily all that widely embraced. But, for instance, there was a press conference yesterday where LG showed off this new 55-inch TV. These things are really, really thick, you know, tenth of an inch, you know, 0.16 inch deep. They weigh 16.5 pounds. It's a 55-inch TV. So, and you know, the response times are just fantastic on this. I mean, in fact, one of the big things that we'll see at this CES will be TVs in general. You know, there's like, I think it's an 85-inch, 84-inch TV being introduced. Now, this is sort of a challenge because I don't know many people, you know, who even have doorways that can let that through, much less living rooms that could support it. But, you know, these tend to be, you know, enormous, really, really sharp-looking screens. People are definitely going to want this, even if you don't necessarily have a place for it.
They just don't know it yet, right?
Well, right, exactly. Well, you know, if we look, we're talking about some of those trends that happened in the previous years. Many of those, they were indeed trends, but it's not like they've taken the world by storm. You know, Android tablets from last year, we've seen a lot of them, but people were not necessarily buying them. They're still buying the iPad. But, you know, we're going to see many, many more of those tablets. And these things, they are absolutely getting better. So sometimes it's many years out. 3D TV was another thing where everyone was very excited about it on the manufacturing side. On the consumer side, people said, yeah, maybe in the theater. But it's not like, again, people have been buying all that many of them. So these are leading indicators. And often it's more like 2, 3, 4 years. Or sometimes it doesn't happen at all. Netbooks was our big trend 3 years ago, mm-hmm. and you know, netbooks are pretty much going away, being replaced by one of this year's trends, which is the Ultrabook.
The super thin laptop.
Yeah, exactly.
Super thin, super light. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So these are very specifically based on Intel chips, and they have you know, very specific specs. And I've talked about them in the show before, you know, 3 or so pounds. They're, you know, less than an inch thick. They've got, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours of battery life. And, you know, they're really sharp looking. They are, I think, taking a certain amount of inspiration from the MacBook Air. And we will absolutely see a bunch of these at the show. Actually, Intel has already done some, you know, lid lifting and previewed a few of them. They're not necessarily all going to be shipping right away, but, you know, over probably the next 3, 4, 5 months, we'll see a lot of them. I've heard some guesses that we'll see something like 75 new Ultrabooks released this year, and I'm betting there'll be, say, 25 of them that we'll get to see at the show. These are really sharp-looking, highly functional laptops, you know, as opposed to the netbooks, which, you know, were small and cheap and didn't necessarily do everything you wanted. These things are pretty much, you know, do-it-all laptops. But, you know, they're small, they're thin, they're light.
Let's take a question right now from Rick in Sunbury. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I presently have an internet connection through what is known as Bright Choice, which is a satellite-based thing available to people out in the country that have no other choice. And I find it slow to say the least, and very frustrating when there's cloud cover, it doesn't work, and that kind of thing. So I recently became aware that there was something called tethering, which I could do through a smartphone. Now, currently, I do not have a smartphone. I have a regular cell phone. So the idea of a smartphone struck me as being something that would, you know, that's good because on the fly I could sort of check the weather and, you know, other things that a smartphone does. But the tethering feature is what I was interested in because the satellite TV not only is our satellite internet is not only quite slow, but it's also expensive. So my question is, Tethering is available very, very cheaply and, you know, will allow me to get all that stuff. But does tethering compare? Is it a good thing to do through the cell phone capabilities of Wi-Fi?
You know, I don't know anyone who is using tethering as their full-time, you know, in-house connection. Tethering is a tremendous convenience. I would check very carefully when you say they're doing it, you know, at a reasonable price. Also, just make sure that that's not, you know, with bandwidth limits, which most of these have, or you know, certain amount of bits that you can get, and then you have to pay more. It's generally not, from what I've seen, it's not the most cost effective. It is a fantastic convenience. And if you have good 3G or you know, maybe even 4G at some point reception, you might actually find you're getting a pretty good connection on it. You know, it sounds to me like your options are somewhat limited. What I would do is just, you know, get a 1 month trial on this and see how it works. Look very carefully at the fine print, though, because, you know, what you really want, you know, your typical connection is an all-you-can-eat connection, but if you're going through tethering, I'd be surprised if that were the case.
Thank you, Rick, for the call.
Thank you very much.
You bet. So my guest, Steve Fox, editorial director at PC World, he's getting ready to head off to the International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. We're talking about some of the big trends this year. Quad-core phones is on my list.
Yes, it is. And so what we've been seeing in phones is they just keep getting more powerful. You know, just talking to Rick, and, you know, he's thinking about a smartphone for some other reasons. You know, as these become more capable computing machines, they need more and more processing power. And so now, you know, what would have been unthinkable, you know, a year ago, is to have, you know, these multiple processors, you know, multiple core processors inside a phone. You know, there's some questions that we have about battery life in general. You know, these are very small devices. They heat up when they have all this power in them. But we're definitely expecting, you know, along with what we've already seen, all the dual core, we're going to see some quad core phones that will be coming up. You know, there is another big phone event that comes up in February in Barcelona, which, you know, sounds like one of the great press junkets of all time. yeah, they, you know, might as well pick a good location.
Right.
But that's Global Mobile Conference. It's a big global show. And there, some of the stuff that will be held out from CES that you won't see, we'll see it there. So we're going to see some quad-core phones here, many more in Barcelona, along with some very, very beefy tablets with multi-cores as well.
What sort of new features, I mean, do you get with something like that, with the added power of a quad-core phone? How would the average consumer see a difference?
Well, you know, they can just do more processing. You know, for running apps, things will be faster, and, you know, and who knows, you can probably cook an egg on them as well, which
if you get hot enough.
not a feature that I think people, that the vendors have really explored. I think some sort of a non-stick skillet sort of approach, you know, might be handy.
Like recycle the heat?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe this would work. But, you know, we'll be seeing, you know, many more of these, and what I expect is applications usually follow the power. So as these things get more powerful, you'll get beefier applications that can do more processing and the like. And that'll be kind of interesting. You know, I talked about TVs earlier, and there's really one more TV thing I want to talk about here, because this is exciting. And this may sound like, you know, some sort of a something you'd see in a race, a 4K, but actually in this case, 4K is a new kind of display technology that is going to have a much higher resolution on current TVs. So you may ask, why do we need this? And the answer is, you know, as we get more programming that can support it, we will see these super high resolution TVs. Actually, what it is, it's many more pixels, you know, per square inch than even what we get now. You know, currently these good TVs, they're 1080p is the basic spec. That's a really nice, very dense high resolution TV. These things are going to be even higher definition displays, And, oh, yeah, and here I'm seeing this note on it that it talked about that 84-inch TV. That's a 4K 3D TV. So what we need here is the broadcasters and others have to start supplying content, you know, chicken or egg sort of thing, that can take advantage of this. They're probably not going to create this kind of content until there are TVs that can really show it. I'm a big fan of a show called Battlestar Galactica, the reboot of that. And apparently, that's one of the things that's being looked at as a super high resolution version. Which, you know, okay, I'll admit that's something that I might pay for.
I was listening to BBC this morning to the reporter who's at show in Las Vegas right now, and he was talking about smart TVs too.
Yeah, so a lot of smart TVs that will have. You know, you'll be able to speak to them. They'll have just higher functionality. Obviously, we do. You know, we'll be able to do web surfing. You've still got your Netflix and all the movies and everything else. But these are being viewed as the center of some sort of digital hub. And that's, you know, one of the ways they can be viewed. You know, in the past, we've seen PCs as the center of that hub. We've seen different things making their play to be the center of that digital universe. If you think about many families, you know, in their living room, they've got the TV. This becomes the central piece that you can, stream stuff from and to. We're seeing some other TVs, kind of these smart TVs that are, you know, wireless that you can bring wherever you want. So I think we're seeing at this show, TVs as taking center stage.
And then finally, the Android 4 tablets, the ice cream sandwich.
Yeah, so possibly the worst named tech of all time. I love ice cream sandwiches. I just still can't understand how the operating system becomes ice cream sandwich, and so I am waiting for the next so I can stop having to say it.
Well, but just so people know, each Android version is developed under a code name based on a dessert item.
Exactly. Well, and so we've had things like, you know, honeycomb,
cupcakes,
right? Mm-hmm. Exactly. Gingerbread. So, I think maybe we can all nominate our next favorite. It's
whatever they were hungry for at the moment.
Exactly. It has a certain random feel, but ice cream sandwich is the latest, and that is essentially that is Android 4.0. And we are, absolutely seeing tablets. You know, Toshiba is announcing something. The X10, the Excite X10. So there's a lot of X's in that. Mm-hmm. Various other makers will be coming out with these tablets. It's a really nice, well done operating system. It's kind of the logical progression that you've seen in Android. This stuff just absolutely works, and it's optimized for a tablet. And one of the things that was tricky, and you ran these older, the initial versions of Android, they may have been optimized for, say, a phone. This thing really takes advantage of what tablets can do. So in terms of the displays itself and what it does with the icons and how responsive it is, we are going to see a ton of these coming out. I'm not sure how many of them will be available immediately. You know, we've had a chance to play with a good number of these.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that this is going to be one of the big trends at the show. So lots of ice cream sandwiches. And I would imagine that they'll probably be serving real ice cream sandwiches.
I was going to say.
You know, there's a promotion opportunity here. Right. And that's one thing that tech companies totally understand, that you need to take advantage of all that you can do if you're trying to promote something with a name as silly as ice cream sandwich.
A lot of swag at these places?
There is a lot of swag, although I would have to say that the swag quotient has dropped over the years. You know, if you go back to the days when we used to have a show called Comdex, which used to be in November. It was the big computer show. And, you know, that one is blessedly gone. But that was as big as this. And there, the swag was crazy. So, obviously there were things like stress balls and pins, but then it would go up and up from there. And ridiculous numbers of shirts. My wife has now said I'm not permitted to bring a T-shirt home from any of these shows anymore. So, this is one of the benefits, if you could call it that.
Any big shots you're looking forward to seeing or hearing there? Big shots, because they have these keynote speeches they do.
Yeah. So I'm actually, because, you know, I hit the floor, I rely on, our my group of reporters to follow the big keynotes. I try to actually go and see as many people as I can in terms of, you know, people on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Sometimes you find these really obscure little companies doing something you can't believe is true. You know, we found this one, these guys who make a mobile phone. If they say the charge will last for 15 years, you know, we don't know. And needless to say, it's going to be a hard one to test because, you know, we'll come out with the results 15 years from now and no one will really care. And that's, by the way, if you don't use it, which kind of, I think, defeats most of the point of a phone. But, you know, these are guys who are going to be somewhere on the floor at CES, and we'll find it's called Spare One, by the way.
Okay.
So, you know.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing about the most obscure and whatever else piqued your interest this week, next week.
Okay, that will be fun.
Thank you, Steve.
Take care.
Steve Fox, editorial director at PC World. Coming up, Russell Holley, tech blogger for Geek.com. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
When Jodi Kantor was researching her book on the first family, there was one source she didn't pursue.
I've never called any of their babysitters. I just can't do it. It's the babysitter. I'm a mom. I can't call the babysitter.
But she did speak to 200 sources, including White House aides and friends of the Obamas, for her portrait of their marriage and life in the White House. Kantor's new book is The Obamas. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And you can help shorten our upcoming winter membership drive. Become a sustaining member. For every 100 sustaining members we receive, we will eliminate one day from our membership drive. Visit WOSU.org and make your sustaining gift right now. And be sure to join 89.7 NPR News for live special coverage of the New Hampshire primary. It's tonight, beginning at 9. Join NPR's Robert Siegel and Melissa Block and a panel of political reporters for candidate speeches, interviews, and expert analysis. It's special coverage of the New Hampshire primary from NPR News, tonight beginning at 9, right here on 89.7 FM. Sunny skies for today and another unseasonably mild day for the beginning of January, a high of 48. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 36 degrees. Expect some rain for Wednesday, but still mild temperatures with a high near 50. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The world's largest consumer technology trade show, the International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, opens today, featuring 2,700 exhibitors and an expected attendance of 140,000. Today, we're talking about trends to watch as gadget makers get ready to show off their latest tech products for the coming year. Joining us now from Las Vegas is Geek.com tech blogger Russell Holley. Welcome back, Russell.
Thanks for having me back, Ann.
The ICES begins today and runs through Friday. Are you excited to be there?
I am. I've actually been here since Sunday. There's been so much going on.
Wow. It starts today. Have you been there before?
This is actually my second year doing the entire show.
You wanted to talk about a few things. Is there anything that surprised you?
Yeah, I actually was actually at the Sony press conference yesterday. They did a specific thing where they unveiled a lot of their new products, and they really surprised me with their next step in you know, something that is better than high definition. they're actually calling it 4K.
Right.
And it is you know, you see these high definition screens, you know, the full HD is called, you know, 1080p, and this is four times that resolution.
You know, Steve Fox was just talking about that, and I didn't ask him, you know, how much I mean, I can't see very well down the street, so I mean, how much more resolution can we take?
Well, you know, the 1080p is, you know, when we watch that on our televisions, a lot of people have laptops and you know, cell phones now are reaching that resolution. So being able to take that, the screen quality that you see on a higher end laptop, and moving that to the television, you know, we will see some enhancements when it comes to being able to read text and things like that.
You wanted to talk about something called the MakerBot 3D printer?
I have been a big fan of the MakerBot for a long time. They've been around for a little while now, and they're releasing a new product on the show floor today.
So what is it?
Well, it's a 3D printer, and that's kind of hard to explain. Basically, it takes a plastic resin and heats it up really fast, and then drops a series of dots on a tray, and then they cool, and then it does it again in layers until it builds a three-dimensional object.
What's the point? I mean, how deep does it go?
You can, depending on what size MakerBot you have, you can print anything. And then, there are 3D scanning tools that you can get, or if you are a computer graphics person, you can actually build a 3D model of something and have it printed out.
So their first model is called the Thing-O-Matic.
Yeah, they're a very silly company. I have a soft spot for companies that don't take themselves seriously.
Uh-huh. And their first model is called the Thing-O-Matic. Cost $1,300. That's not too bad.
Considering what it's capable of, these are nice machines. They're good priced, and they aren't as big as they used to be. When 3D printers have been around for about 5 years now, and they used to be completely just massive. They'd occupy half a room.
Okay.
And what made MakerBot special was that not only were they comparably inexpensive, but they didn't take up a lot of space either.
Okay, so in December, AC Gear Store in New York City announced the U.S. retail debut of the 3D printer. So you couldn't just get it, anywhere and just buy it.
No, it was definitely something that was specialist. They were handmade and used, and MakerBot was one of the first companies that started making them, for the consumer space.
So I get it. I think it sounds really cool, and I'd like to see one in operation. But what is the average? Why would this be at the retail level? What could I possibly do with it?
Well, that's the thing. It's something that, once you set your mind to being able to resolve a problem by just printing it yourself, then you start to be able to see these kind of things, like silly little things you can start out with. There's a company right now that makes, custom made dice, that they make by printing them for you. You basically submit a design to them, and they'll print them in a 3D printer and send them to you. Lots of small little things that you'd be able to do around the house. I actually know somebody who has a 3D printer and actually used it to replace all of the curtain rod holders in his house because the plastic was sturdier.
Wow.
Yeah.
Could he pick the color resin? And
yes, and that's actually the big thing about the version of the MakerBot that's being released today. The replicator is actually unique in that it can print two different colors at the same time.
Wow. Okay, so Google TV. We were talking a little bit about that before, but I did want to talk about it more. It's when I was listening to BBC this morning, they were saying, hey, this is what everybody wants now, mm-hmm. Smart TV.
Yeah, it definitely picked up a lot this year. Google, before CES, announced partnership with six different companies that they were moving into CES to release products with, and there's a wide variety. We talked previously about televisions that had Google TV built in, and now Sony and another manufacturer, Marvel, have released little boxes that you can buy that are going to be, right around the $100 to $200 range, that you'll be able to just plug into a normal television and have that smart TV functionality.
And so tell us about what does that mean, the smart TV functionality? It's just like operates just like a big screen for a computer?
Well, you'll have access to a web browser. You'll be able to stream Netflix straight to your television. You'll be able to rent movies from different services. You'll be able to stream, music from your favorite, artist or... really, there's just the possibilities are going to be everything from just surfing the internet to playing video games and absorbing new kinds of content.
Now, the technology's been out there for years, though, right?
Connecting a computer to a television is definitely nothing new. This is just a whole lot less expensive, and the user interface is way easier for anybody to use.
So, what else? Well, we've got a tweet from Moon Pie Pudding, writes, my fiance used to make me jewelry on OSU's engineering printer.
That's definitely something that a 3D printer would be capable of.
It's very romantic, Moon Pie Pudding. Jewelry, whatnot. What else? What else are you seeing around there that you're looking forward to going and checking out?
I definitely want to go talk to this company. They make cell phone cases. Their name is Casemate. And they've started focusing really hard on cases that can absorb, you know, different kinds of damage from how a phone falls. A lot of our smartphones now are a little on the fragile side. You know, the iPhone actually has glass on both sides of the device, so if it falls, you know, from you know, 5 feet, the chances of it surviving are not terribly high. What the guys at Casemate are doing, they actually have a plastic shell that goes around the phone to protect it from, you know, very rugged falls,
mm-hmm.
and then a rubberized sleeve that'll go over top of that plastic casing that'll, you know, stop from small bumps and things like that.
Well, what about the front of it, though? Don't you need to be able to touch that?
Well, you'll still cover the front, and you'll still have access to as far as being able to touch it, but it actually, the way the rubber is set, it gives just a little tiny, you know, almost like a bezel around it that'll make it so that if it falls face first, it's less likely to break the screen.
614-292-8513, still with us, Russell Holley, tech blogger for Geek.com. If you have a question or comment for him, he's in Las Vegas right now. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go the way of Moon Pie Pudding and tweet me at Ann Fisher, WOSU. You can also go to the Facebook page for that matter. So, Casemate, I'm going to check that out because, you know, I got a new iPhone.
Casemate's definitely, they have a lot of different products for the iPhone.
iPhone. Okay, here's my iPhone question for the day, and then we can get back to the Las Vegas. When you charge it up, should you wait until it almost has lost its complete charge, or should you just constantly be recharging it? Because it loses its charge pretty quickly if you use it a lot.
The iPhone really works either way.
Okay.
You know, the battery is actually pretty specially designed to be able to handle either type of use.
Okay.
And there are actually a lot of cases. Casemate isn't one of the companies that makes them, but there's another company called Mophi that makes a case that actually has an extra battery inside of it for the iPhone, so that when you slide the iPhone into this case, it has twice the battery power that it would when it's not in the case.
So it doesn't hurt it if you charge it up before it's almost lost its charge. It's not one of those.
You can charge it anytime.
Okay. All right. So what else at Las Vegas?
Well, Samsung actually released it's kind of hard to call it a cell phone, but that's what they're calling it. It's actually called the Samsung Galaxy Note. And it has a 5-inch screen, just a really large screen. Your iPhone has a 3.7-inch screen, to give you a frame of reference. And so this enormous screen actually has a pretty decent resolution. It allows you to see, you know, whole web pages instead of having to, you know, slide up and down as you're looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
It's thin enough that it still fits in your pocket, but you definitely notice that it's there.
Okay. What's the dimensions of it again?
It's got a 5-inch screen, and it's I don't remember exactly how long it is. One of the things that makes it unique is that it actually has a stylus that is designed for, you know, fine writing, you know, so you can actually take notes, you know, as the name suggests, on the screen, you know, and it has handwriting recognition that'll make it much easier to use as a notepad, kind of similar to what we did with, you know, the Palm Pilot
right.
style device, but because the resolution is so much higher on the screen, you can write entire pages on the screen, you know, and still have perfectly readable handwriting.
And you don't have to do that special handwriting or that's the special alphabet.
No, we've grown a lot since then.
Mm-hmm. And what about that stylus? Can you use it just to, like, on the keyboard?
Yes, if you wanted to use the stylus to, you know, just kind of type away at the keyboard, then that's certainly available as well. Samsung did a very good job with this phone. I can see it being somewhat intimidating because the screen size is so large. But for people who can move past that, it offers a different use, you know, for a smartphone because it kind of moves closer to that it's a small computer thought.
Mm-hmm. A small tablet.
Right.
If you can write on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how long are you there?
I will be here until Saturday. The show actually ends on Friday, and I leave Saturday morning.
And what's your favorite swag so far?
I actually was talking to the guys from Olympus. They released a new line of cameras and audio recorders, and their flash drive is a little rubber camera, and I really like that.
So what else is out there that you're going to be looking at and telling us about next week?
There are so many different things. Anybody who's a Dish Network user, the guys from Dish Network have completely just revamped the entire company, everything about how Dish Network functions from Q2 of this year moving forward is going to be very different. And that's going to make a lot of people pretty happy, I think. They've made a lot of really positive changes to their company, including a new DVR that has just really a lot of power, including the ability to, record all of the primetime shows from the four major networks up to 8 days without you asking for it. So if you sit down and remember that you've missed that show, it already has it saved for you. It's not like a TiVo where you have to go in and ask it to record each show.
It just automatically does it.
It'll grab the last 8 days of all the primetime shows.
What are you questioning now? Is there anything very odd out there that you have a lot really hard time grasping that it could actually work the way they say?
There's a company that I'm going to go see today that is claiming that you can actually take a cell phone and dip it in this special solution that they've made, and it makes the phone waterproof. I'm really
like those socks.
About that.
The guy, really.
It's supposed to, use some pretty clever science to fill in the gaps of the phone and make it, not like 10 feet underwater waterproof, but if you were to splash water on it, then it wouldn't cause any problems. Or if you were to, submerge it once accidentally in water, then it wouldn't cause a problem. And I'm going to go see them today and see exactly how that works and whether or not that works the way they say it does.
Microsoft, it's their last year keynoting the event. Apple doesn't go there. How relevant is the technology show now these days?
Well, the big thing to keep in mind with Apple and Microsoft is that they're both big enough where, they do their own press, events, and they're significant enough to draw in their own attention. And that's something that I think doesn't detract at all from the Consumer Electronics Show, because the large portion of the Consumer Electronics Show is, a meeting space of all of these, creative minds, all these different companies coming together and releasing these products. Microsoft is, the space that they occupy in the show floor, versus the volume of products that they output every year, it doesn't make as much sense for them to be here versus releasing their own products.
It's not like they're going to lose visibility or something in the larger sense.
Not at all.
Some people criticize the timing of this show now. It doesn't make sense to come out in January after the big sales season. But Steve Fox was saying that's really not what this is about.
Well, the products that you see here, by and large, they're not coming out until, July, August, September. There will be a handful of things that we see here that will come out in the coming months. But the point of the show is to give consumers and give the press and give the companies that are buying these products a look at, how they can plan their next year as far as technology purchases.
And it's great exposure for the little guy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I actually saw three different companies last night that, this event was their product launch. They were not a company until last night, when they announced the things that they were releasing.
And I think that would be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Well, Russell Holly, I look forward to hearing your final impressions next Tuesday on Tech Tuesday.
I will be there.
All right. Russell Holly, tech blogger for Geek.com. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.